The views expressed on the Big Shiny Podcast are explicitly the views of everyone on BigShinyRobot.com, regardless of what anyone may tell you.
And the Big Shiny Podcast contains coarse language such as shit, damn, and hell. Listener discretion is advised.
What's up, guys? This is Tom with Big Shiny Robot. In lieu of a full comics episode this month due to the crazy party nature of the holidays, we have an interview here with Mark Waid about his new book Shadow Walk, done by our contributor Randall Bradford. So tune on in, give it a listen, and have a great holiday.
What kind of song and dance can I do for you today? What sort of questions can I answer for you? Happy to.
The first question that I have is, where did the inspiration for Shadow Walk come from?
From Thomas Tull's own noggin. And honestly, that is the one question that nobody has asked yet, and that is the one question that it never even occurred to me to ask Thomas, where did this come from in your head? But wherever it came from, the basic notion of the Valley of the Shadow of Death being a real place because there are antecedents to it beyond the King James Bible.
Mm-hmm.
All throughout recorded history, there are antecedents to it. The idea that it's a real place and it contains something that we shouldn't or oughtn't mess with, that was from Thomas's head. And so I was approached by Legendary to take that and turn it into a graphic novel. When I was approached, I honestly had no idea who Thomas Tall was. No offense to Thomas, I had no idea. I knew Legendary.
Mm-hmm.
But when I met with Thomas, it was an incredibly relaxed meeting because I thought I was just meeting with some, you know, mid-level executive. I had no idea. Some development guy. I had no idea. And then it was probably only 10 minutes into meeting him that I realized, oh, my God, you're the guy who runs the place. Oh. But that's to Thomas's credit because he didn't come, you know, he didn't come into meetings in a, you know, $2,000 suit and gold cufflinks to try to impress you. In fact, the reason he brought me in was because he thought this would make an excellent graphic novel, his notion, his idea. And he was very, very supportive about me not writing something that is a disguised film treatment, me not writing something that is, you know, a movie script that is passing itself off as a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's why he tapped me, because he wanted somebody who knew the form. He knows movies. But he doesn't know how to write comics, and I know how to write comics. So the number one rule, sort of the North Star guiding principle of the whole creative process, was never lose sight of the fact that it is a graphic novel and not, a disguised treatment for a TV series.
Right. So with that, because writing comics are different than writing, like, screenplays or novels or anything like that, what advice do you have for someone who is trying to write their own comic? How is it different?
First and foremost, stay visual. And, you know, stick to the moments that are visual on the page. I'll give you the best example, is that when Thomas pitched out the story to me, he had this amazing opening scene in mind where it's Vienna, it's the middle of the night, rain is falling, and a bunch of limousines pull up, and a bunch of guys in suits get out, and they go in the building, and they sit around a conference table, and they realize they've been brought together to discuss this mystery discovery in the Iranian desert, and there's slideshows, and there's exposition, and that's a great scene if it's a movie, because you can carry that sense of atmosphere and that sense of in a movie. But in comics, that's five pages of death. That's five pages of guys in business suits sitting around a business table, sitting around a conference table, and that nobody wants to pay to read that, if that makes any sense.
Uh-huh.
So instead, you know, my advice to comics writers, graphic novelists, is writing comics is like writing haiku. It's a very sort of terse language. The idea is to try to let the visuals do most of the work and to not overclutter it with any information or any words that don't belong there. Just, you know, keep it tight. Tell the story and get it moving.
And with the biblical reference, you know, with the walking in the shadow of the valley of death, and it makes me and other readers that I've talked to about what they want to know about think of Kingdom Come, and which was one of my first graphic novels, actually. Do you enjoy using biblical imagery in your works?
I do. It's the works are 17 years apart, so it's not as, you know, to my mind, it's not as obvious as it seems to be to other people if there's a connection, but I suppose there is. But that's because the Bible, whether you perceive it as a work of fiction or a sainted, you know, testament of God, it, regardless of what you feel about it, it is still resplendent with these amazing stories and myths and imagery. And there's no reason that you can't and shouldn't delve into that any deeper than you would any tomes of history or myth from world culture.
Right. And with Shadowhawk, I mean, it's a different project than writing at, you know, DC or Marvel. So what was it like to write about characters who don't have half a century of history behind them and other things to worry about from other creative teams and what they've done in the past?
It was great. I mean, there's a sort of a clean slate aspect to it that allows you to be a little more layered with the characters, if you will, give them a little more dimension, because you're not having to worry about being at a convention and having someone stand up in the audience and ask you why the character that you just invented that's not consistent with the way he acted in 1963. So that's
right.
Because they're not superheroes, they're not naturally adventurers. In fact, it's basically a team of scientists led by a military man going into this place. I was able to, this is not the kind of material that you would normally find in a mainstream comic, because there's no capes, there's no tights. There's a science fiction look to it. But
right.
Again, that loosened me up a little bit. It gave me a little more flexibility.
Right, and with that, I mean, Shane Davis, I mean, he did a great job with the art, and it's really just simply stunning, but I did notice there is definitely a sci-fi look to it other than an organic one. So did you see the art beforehand, or did you see it after? Did it go with what you had in your mind?
It did go with what I had in my mind. I mean, Thomas is the guy who picked him, as far as I know, but no complaints from me. Because it was such a long script, you know, I wasn't finished with it by the time Shane started drawing. That just seemed silly, because it was going to take me 6 months or 8 months to finish the thing. So, you know, as I got, we had a tight outline, and then as I got pages done and acts done, we would send them to Shane, and Shane would start sketching out and doing pages. So once he had the first batch of pages in, it gave me a better sense of what his strengths and where his heart lay and what he liked to draw, and that sort of informed the story a little bit. It certainly became more of a monster fest, which is fine, which is for a science fiction horror story like this, that's perfectly, you know, perfectly fitting. But once you get a sense of the kind of bizarre, horrific creatures that Shane can concoct in his imagination, you know, if you're a writer, you run with that.
Right. So which of the characters from Shadowhawk do you most identify with, and why?
I actually think I identify most with the lead character, Reigns, not just because he lives in his head with his thoughts most of the time like I tend to, but also because he is by nature not a man of faith. He is not a spiritual man, and while I grew up in the Deep South with years and years of tent revivals in my history and all that stuff, I didn't grow up to be a very spiritual man.
And which of the characters surprised you the most once you actually started getting them down on the page?
The lead, our main narrator, our elderly minister who takes point, because I really didn't know what to make of him as a character other than a narrator. I didn't know how much of the story I needed or wanted him to be a part of, and it really wasn't until I got into writing Act 3 that I suddenly realized what he needed and what his own personal quest was in this story. I'm not sure. You know, I wish I'd kind of, you know, it's rare that you start a story of that length and don't have that in mind, but son of a gun, you know, now it makes, now he makes sense to me.
Right. And with, I mean, the day and age we live in, you know, technology is just blowing up. And so with that, digital comics are becoming a bigger, bigger thing. So are there different elements you need to consider when you're doing like a paper comic versus a digital, or do they just transition seamlessly most of the time?
They don't really transition seamlessly in the sense that they transition really well, but the big thing that you get with a digital comic that lends itself well to especially science fiction horror or horror like this is that you get a new surprise on every page. And you don't, this is with a, you know, the comic or graphic novel, the only place I can surprise you as a writer is on the upper left-hand corner of the spread, right? You open a book and you turn the page and I can surprise you, but then you've got all that material before you turn the page again. You're taking it in. This way, with every swipe of the screen, I can blow your socks off.
Right. And people love what, you know, you did with the Fantastic Four. Did the experience with, like, writing one of the most iconic teams in Marvel kind of give you a basis of how you wanted this team to work together, being scientists, or are they completely separate?
You know, I tend to think of them as completely separate because there's but there is one element that is common. It is the only, and you have to look heavily for it to find it, but I think the element that's in common is, in my mind, the Fantastic Four, as dysfunctional a family as they can be and as dark as the menaces they face can be, I think are still driven by hope, and they're, you know, they're fairly optimistic crew. And I think that there is a tone of not optimism exactly, but a low tone of hope and a low tone of anti-cynicism that runs through Shadow Walk if we did our job right. Not in any way that makes it seem happy and bright and shiny. In fact, quite the opposite. But it's not just horror porn.
Right. And in all your years of doing comics, who has been your favorite character to write, either with Marvel, DC, Shadow Walk, or any of your stuff that you've done independently as well?
I have to say, I mean, I really dug writing the Shadow Walk team. I really did, because, again, that sprang from, you know, our Thomas's imagination, Max Brooks's imagination, my imagination. We sort of pooled our thoughts about who these characters were, but they were very much up to me to make mine. And that was a very refreshing experience.
So with Shadow Walk coming in, so with your run with Daredevil over, do you have, like, downtime planned, or are you straight on to your next project?
You make me laugh, sir. you slay me. I believe I am taking today from 2 to 2.30 to have some lunch, and I think that constitutes my downtime for the next 2 weeks. So, but these are good but you know what? That is a good problem to have. I cannot complain.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Randa, you can ask one more. That was such a quick answer if you have one.
Oh. you know what? That's it. I'm done. So thank you guys very much.
Okay. No, my pleasure. Thank you. And again, I hope I gave you the material you were looking for.
Oh, you did, for sure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Send us a link when you're done. I'm very curious to read.
Thank you for listening to this month's Big Shiny Podcast. Be sure to check out other podcasts in the Big Shiny Robot Podcast family, including the Big Shiny Girl Cast, Laser Brain, and the Big Movie Mouth Off. And for all you Utah local residents, be sure to check out the Big Shiny Geek Show Pub Quiz every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. at Lucky 13.